This is a Gutter production.
I have a Desert Eagle gun.
You have a Desert Eagle?
She's got a deagle.
It's like a handgun, isn't it?
That is like the biggest handgun.
Oh, it is?
Yeah. That's like a monster.
I assume that Eleni looked at the damage value and was like, what's the highest value?
Yeah, I did. I looked
at like a gun you need with two hands because it goes like every time you fire it. Not saying you can't have that because that is very funny and cool.
Hold on. I got to look it up.
Don't get me wrong. It's a cool gun.
It's big.
Yeah, that's a honker.
That can't be real. That cannot be real.
Yeah, it's like as big as your head.
That's freaking
If you pay me
awesome.
$50, you can get a really colorful Desert Eagle. $50? You can get some really cool skins.
Like in-game?
In-game, yeah.
Oh, anyway. Wow. He's taking bribes now. He's taking freaking bribes.
Doing Fortnite-style in-game purchases.
I see. You can get a new character skin. Yeah. Oh, you want to change your outfit? Pay me
$25. Yeah. Oh, yeah, you're going to need to pay me $25 to have a fun hat.
What a little fucker.
How's everybody's headphone level?
Dope as fuck.
Pretty good.
Can you turn Ganon way down? Just kidding.
Put Ganon on mute for me. He told me to pay him $50. And I don't want to hear that.
Trees, the bite of a strong ocean wind, the sound of classical music playing under the chatter of partygoers. Here we are, baby, we're on Shaw Island, before the black and white angular grandeur of the Barry Treble Estate. The camera is now dollying up the concrete staircase up to the front door, and the door opens, as if by itself, to a full and lively reception area. It's a grand hall with twin black staircases framing a great crystal doorway. There's a quartet playing classical music. Drinks are being handed out by black-vested caterers to chirping wealthy masses, all masked. All varieties of masks. We see a frizzy-haired woman with an overflowing red beret wearing a classic white masquerade piece, a man with flowing robes and a huge white hat wearing a featureless bronze mask, a man with Groucho Marx glasses and a sailor cap is looking very foggy in the eyes, and he's sort of stumbling through the party, cameras following him. He moves up to a door that says catering staff only, this drunken sailor guy, and he opens it, and he just sort of like heaves himself into this busy kitchen drunkenly, immediately helping himself to like plated food, and these caterers are all yelling, "Hey, cut it out there, dude!
Sir, please, sir,
for the guests only. Sir,
there's plenty of food outside." We see a black vested woman. She's pushing past the sailor through the kitchen doors, squeezing through partygoers, passing by a man in a Dick Nixon mask who's sweating profusely, squeezing past a guy wearing an eye patch over a cheap Santa Claus mask who also has a huge red beard, pushing past a boisterous laughing man with yellow teeth who's sort of just wrapped toilet paper around his head, walking towards the crystal door between the twin stairs. She opens this door. And where the other room was very noisy, this room is austere. Not necessarily quiet, but an air of great importance. It's a white marble everywhere, very large high ceiling, and it's lit totally by candlelight, which gives it almost a religious feeling. There's about 100 people sitting here, eagerly, in pews, looking up at a stage. It's all set for an auction. There's a middle-aged woman in a silver beaded mask, and she's got this rockin' yellow dress, and she's standing with like insane rich person posture behind a podium beside a golden statue of a man with a twisted spiraling face. This woman is leading the auction.
22,000, Adrian's bid at the moment. $22,000. Christine, it is just between you and Adrian at the moment. 22,000. Lot number 30. 22,000, don't let the chance slip through your hands. Adrienne is holding it at the moment. 26,000, and we continue. 26,000, everyone take a good look on the left in all its glory. $26,000, now is the time to click. 26,000 then. Fair warning, selling at $26,000. Sold. 26,000 to Christine. Congratulations.
There's polite applause through the room. A couple of hoots. And bursting out onto stage, we see a tight-faced, unblinking, balding man with a red plastic CVS party mask. And he's applauding as stagehands cart off the golden statue.
What a beautiful night it's been! Give yourselves all a big hand! There we go. Raising money for a great cause while navigating the new landscape of our thrilling future. Yes! We are going to take a quick break to prepare. Please refresh your drinks. Grab an hors d'oeuvre. The fried quail skewers are top notch. But don't wander too far.
Woo! The band enters the auction space and starts playing, and the crowd stands up, begins chatting, and caterers attend with silver trays of beverages and small bites. And we see the black-vested caterer. She is weaving through the crowd. She's edging towards the stage where the bald man is walking through a back door. She follows him into a dim back room. Now, this room it's very backstagey. It's very dusty, but there's like a table, and it's sort of adorned with, it's dark, so you can't see super well, but jewels, bottles of this and that. Is that a withered hand you see? Is that a reliquary you see? Many pieces of art. There's also sort of a dark, lumpy sphere, sparkling rainbows, like it's like a pool of oil, a lumpy sphere with the dark black sort of rainbow quality. And there's a sign beside all of these items that says, "For auction, do not touch." As the caterer approaches Barry, we see that he's poring over a small black notebook. When he hears the caterer approach, he looks up. Excuse me, Mr. Treble? Bald man turns, slipping the black book into his jacket pocket.
Hey now, what's with the formality? It's Barry. You can call me Barry.
Pardon, Mr. Barry. a pitiless gaze has arrived. It arrived a bit ago, and I'm sorry. I was looking. I was trying to find you in the
Kim. It's Kim, right? Mm-hmm. Kim. That's a problem. That's a very important package. You didn't tell me sooner.
I'm sorry. It was my fault. I couldn't find you. I was looking all over.
That's not my problem. Not my problem. If I have to go out front... Here, put these gloves on.
He hands the caterer a pair of white gloves.
You see that black, shimmering thing? I need you to place that on the table for auction. I was going to do that, but I can't do that now that I have to go to the front door. So now you got to move that thing to stage display table. Is that good for you? You think you can do that, Kim?
Barry Treble whisks out of the room, leaving Kim the caterer with a pair of white gloves in her hands. Whew. She exhales, she's sweating, she's stressed, but she puts on those gloves. She goes over to the crystal viscous vascular orb and picks it up gingerly, steps out to the stage. The auction is starting up again, and the woman at the podium nods to the caterer as the caterer walks carrying the orb across the stage. The auctioneer smiles to the crowd.
Welcome back. We begin the final portion and most exciting portion. This is lot number 104, the Mirror of Fear, a rare artifact of incredible value. This item was previously in the possession of an individual who credited the visions he received from the mirror as essential to the exponential growth of his real estate portfolio.
There's a sort of nods and smiles from the audience. We see Barry. He's walking up the aisle between the pews to the door. The caterer is now placing the mirror on the display table. And as she lets go of the mirror and pulls her arm away, it's just for a brief moment, but for a minuscule moment, as she places the mirror down, her forearm glances up against the orb's black exterior.
And we will start here at $1 million.
As the orb glances against the caterer's wrist, her eyes roll back in her head, white, and she falls. Wham! There's a gasp from the crowd as the caterer slams her head into the ground very hard and starts seizing. In her seizure, she kicks the leg of the display table. The display table topples and the mirror goes flying out into the crowd. Flying through the air, 1, 2, 3, and I'm going to go through this very slowly, but wham! It lands dead center in the aisle and bursts as it hits the stone, and it lets out a terrible sound, so soft and so loud, the crowd, the wave of that effect, that bursting, the crowd starts convulsing. The earth, at the point of collision, becomes jello and pits, and the air in the room warps inward. The room is turned upside down. All things living and non-living are suddenly thrown upward and inward into the point of the crash as if free of gravity. Limbs are tearing, skulls are smashing, blood is flying. Stone and firmament is ripping and tearing as if it was paper. Drywall flying, furniture smashing, bodies twisting. There's a great heat and light, and everything is thrown outward. A violent whirlwind of black is spinning through the crowd, shredding everyone immediately in its center, blowing apart walls, reaching into all rooms of the estate, bursting windows, wrenching stone and earth into a slurry, transforming the mirror's point of collision into a swirling pit, tearing down into the earth. And this all happens in about 2 seconds. The windows in the building are blown out. The estate is gutted. Hundreds of bodies are spread all around among the smashed up pews and blood and viscera. Hundreds of bodies are spread around this newly formed pit where the mirror has burst. We go to now Barry. He was so close to that crystal door. He's on the ground on the edge of this pit. His jacket has been like torn off of his back, and there's deep slashes across his face and body. We hear footsteps. A large, muscular man in a very tight suit reaches down to Barry and starts checking his vitals.
Chopper's inbound, Mr. Treville.
No.
Barry's trying to speak, and he's limply patting down his body, looking for the notebook, which is not there. The large man lifts Barry over his shoulders, fireman style.
We're getting you out of here.
This huge man rushes out of the estate. Barry stares back into the pit, and he sees within the pit that something is rising, piecing itself together from the bodies and viscera around it. Its black wings spread, and Barry looks into red, wet eyes. And wham! The wind is howling up against the windows of this frame of this green car that we know is named Booger. We're inside the vehicle now. It's that smell of breath, of sweat and human fear. Hot air is humming from Booger's car fan. It's dark in the car, lit only by the safety lights of the dock up ahead. The last ferry of the day is pulling away, and we can see its lights blinking into the black night on that inky black water. And the lights go off. In the rear view, the light of the full moon is cascading over a smoke plume rising from the center of the island, from the estate that you just fled. In the distance, you can hear a helicopter, but you can't see it. We turn shotgun, passenger seat, and we see Bodie's hulking frame, staring into a box on his lap. Bodie, you're looking down in this box that you just opened up, It's like velvet on the inside. But you're looking at a blackened and mutilated visor headset, and it's being worn by a human skull. The smell of burnt rubber and battery acid is emitting from this box. You can see the back of the headset is sported. There's like dozens of these very foul, gnarled industrial tubes and wires sort of popping out of the back, sticking back into it, hanging loose. It looks sort of like a VR headset or like a visor or something, but it looks like it's been beat to hell, like maimed with a molten hot spike. There's, in particular, there's like a blackened hole in the right eye of the visor. It's almost like it's like an empty plastic melted eye socket. Bodhi, you're looking at this very strange visor. All of a sudden, the gas has been hit. The car is gunning forward. Wheels are screeching, blasting towards the empty dock, shooting towards those security lights, keeling towards the ocean. You can see Violet is gripping the wheel. Foot has gone pedal to the metal. Bodhi and Scratch are yelling. Just when it feels like you're just like, it's too late to do anything, it's past the point of no return, the car is about to go over the deck into that cold water. Car hits the brakes. I don't know what Violet does, but it's a fucking mean turn. Car peels out, drifts to a perfect and clean stop, just inches away from the edge of the dock, inches from tipping into the water. Violet lets out a howl. For a moment, there's quiet as you guys are sitting in this sweaty, hot car, smell of battery acid lingering with your stale breath.
We need a place to hide.
She spins the car out away from the dock, heads back down the road, back down the path that you just drove away from, and you're now back on the road, driving past trees, ocean to the right of you, driving back into the small town. You can see Violet is shooting her eyes left and right, looking for a place to stop. All you can hear right now is the rumbling of Booger and distant helicopter. It's silent for a moment.
So I don't know if this means anything to you guys, but there's like a human head in here.
Okay, close the package right now. Close the package. I don't know what the fuck we just saw. And I don't know what is going on, but we need to hide now.
That thing was flying, right? That thing had fucking wings.
Yeah, that thing had wings.
I don't know. It could have been like a condor or a goblin with wings. Okay, it was probably something really fucked up, all right? But this is a human head, and it is wearing...
Close the box.
Okay, but what's the point of closing the box? The box is open.
Scratch, you notice... You're looking at this weird, fucked up thing. I don't know if Violet's gotten a good look at it, but you're looking at it.
And it
freaks you out for a second because, yes, it is a human skull. But then something clicks in your head, and you notice in the center of that visor, sort of between the eyes, beside that one hollowed out plastic melted eye, it's like an Ouroboros. But it looks like it has wings. It's very medieval looking. It's like, you know how like a visor will have, like if you plug it in, like a light will come out of the plastic and it looks like it's like a sort of plastic covering that when you plug it in, the light comes out of it. But it's shaped like a dragon eating its own tail.
Like Rayquaza, the Pokemon Rayquaza.
Let me look up Rayquaza.
Yeah, we check this. We need to verify this.
Need to verify. Is it Rayquaza?
No one in my inner circle needs to look up what Rayquaza looks like. Everyone in my inner circle knows what Rayquaza looks like.
Of course, I know what Rayquaza looks like. It looks exactly like
Rayquaza. I suppose it looks like Rayquaza in that it is a long sort of serpent dragon, but it's a little more medieval, you know?
It's a ring.
Yeah, Rayquaza's kind of futuristic.
Rayquaza's a little sort of metally and futuristic. This is more dragony.
Scratch sees this thing. Bodhi is holding the skull like it's Yorick from Hamlet. And he's got it out, and it very clearly has this... Look, Bodhi's a gamer, and he's into electronics and tech and all that shit on a, you know, consumer level. And
also a consumer level that is maybe like 5 to 7 years out of date.
Yes.
He's been living in the temperate rainforest for a long time and trades DVDs.
Oh, did I say Bodhi?
Yeah, you did say Bodhi.
I meant me.
Oh,
your name is Scratch.
My name is Scratch Kelly.
I was happy.
I was like, Bodhi was holding.
thanks for giving Bodhi some gamer cred.
I did. Well, I thought that too.
You have a lot of DVDs. Okay,
there's some games in the DVD menus. Also, you play the game where you look at the DVD logo and see if it ever hits the corner. That's one of my favorite games.
That's one. We did establish that we played a lot of 20 questions, but like as we were waiting.
That's true. Yeah.
And so there are like some things we figured out. And guess what? Scratch now knows that Bodhi's a bit of a gamer, but Bodhi's not as much of a gamer as Scratch Kelly
no.
And doesn't recognize like a good piece of VR tech. But here's the thing. This doesn't look like any headset Scratch has ever seen. And when he sees a cool piece of technology, I mean, he gets excited. And this is already a crazy situation in which the stress and the fear and the adrenaline is mixing with, if you remember, he had kind of gotten into this headspace of like, not detachment, but like everything has gone so wrong, it's almost funny. And so there's a little bit of that still remaining. And he starts to ride this into this fascination. And he's thinking, and he starts to think about the fact that, like, if supernatural entities, like whatever I saw in the sky, are real, and if I am having the kind of shitty day that is only possible if fate itself has turned against me, then maybe, just maybe, the other paranormal reality that I was grasping at for the past several months might just also be real too. And that is when he pulls the tome out of the backpack and he does what he has done often this whole time that he has been out west, except it has never panned out.
Yeah.
And that is, look at the situation around you, break it down into keywords. Are those in this binder?
Yeah.
But he doesn't even need to pull it apart.
This thick binder that the biker guys had grabbed earlier, it's like this 3-inch binder that's just packed full of like loose papers and signifiers and things like that. But you know, you're like, what words? Dragon.
Eyes and...
Yeah, dragon. Eyes.
And
mouth.
And frankly...
What came before.
What came before, and there are two pieces in this tome that he has constructed that he knows back to front, and one of them is on the very first page.
Yep.
He scans through the initial paragraph into the most important part. Now is the time for you to do as the beautiful girl has done. Go west and put your head in the dragon's maw and see through its eyes. Through its eyes, you will find fearful guidance. Do not ignore this letter, because if you do, a horrible thing will become of you, and everyone will soon forget your name. He has thought about this email for the past 6 months.
So you guys are sitting in the car, and he just read that out loud.
What the fuck?
Yeah, I'm holding my knife now.
What are you talking about?
Can I see that real quick? Yeah, can I just take a look? It's already out of the box. Violet, it's already out of the box. The guy's got to be dead.
It's out of the box,
okay.
Violet.
Violet pulls over for a second and finally takes a good look at this head.
Yeah. Boom, nasty visor. It's like, smells like battery acid. It's looking so gnarled and freakish. And there's a skull, too.
Okay, she looks at the head with the visor, is disturbed immediately, and disgusted but intrigued, because it does have some type of weird appeal. And she turns back to Scratch and is like,
we can put it back. I just need to try it. You were thrown, you know, you could say the box opened with the explosion.
Also, your boss is certainly dead, right? Wasn't he in that house that blew up? Like, I'm sorry, Vi, you probably aren't logging back into work on Monday at your job where your boss and probably all the other bigwigs at that company are now dead. This is your severance. This is your literal severed severance.
The ocean laps to your right. Wind blows through the trees.
Okay. Pass him the thing.
Bodhi, do you pass it to him?
Yeah, I do, but I just want to say, I don't... This head's incredible, but also this velvet in this box is so soft. God damn.
I just need you to understand that I know what just happened back there was incredibly fucked up, but I still consider this package to be something that I need to take care of, because they will do shit to me if I don't have this. I will, like, be killed or worse.
I know you have only known me for, like, a couple hours max, so you have no reason to believe me, but I need you to believe me. I know that fate, like, powerful fate, has led to this moment right now, and I have my reasons for believing that. I will take responsibility. If they need somebody to blame, they can kill me. You can say I stole it from you, but I think this is here in our hands right now for a reason.
If anything goes wrong, they will not have to kill you. You understand?
Yeah.
Okay.
All right. We all got our threats out. I just want to say, Violet, I'm not going to let anybody touch a hair on your head. And Scratch, God help you. I can't help you if Violet's coming for you, all right?
Okay.
The box is placed in your lap and you're sitting in the back seat. Heat fans going, wind whipping through the trees above you, ocean to your right. You pick up the visor. The visor comes full with the skull. The skull is, like, connected to the visor.
Yes, and it's, like, there are, like, screws and bolts into the skull from this visor. But since it's just a skull, there's not flesh, there's not brain tissue, I'm able to very deftly pull these screws and bolts out. It seems just fairly intuitive, and I pull the skull back.
And there's, like, a little, like, there's almost, like, it's like you have to tug a little bit, and you pull it out, and it's, like, this... There's, like, a film, like, around the back of the head. It's, like, on, like, almost like a dried pinkish film that just sort of, like, comes off.
Ooh, okay. It's a
little
flesh.
But now you have separated the visor from the skull.
Oh, God. Save every screw.
And then suddenly, now that I'm just holding the skull without this cool visor on it, I'm like, somebody take this.
Bodhi grabs it with one hand. He palms the skull, and he takes a look at this skull, and he wonders briefly who this was. And he puts the skull... Looking at Vi, gives Vi a nod, puts it in the box, looks back to Scratch.
Scratch rests the headset on his head before pulling the visor down, and he searches for a power button, but there isn't a power button on its own, but he follows the cord on the headset, the most prominent cord that's clearly like the attachment, and it happens to be an old VGA cord. Now, these are like the old monitor cords that you used to have, the ones that have the two screws in them on the end. They're really thick and meaty. This is not the kind of cable that can support the bandwidth that VR needs to actually work. So this is confusing. But what is another sign, as if his declaration wasn't enough, that there is something related to fate going on here, is that's exactly what the computer in his backpack uses. The old computer that he had in high school and junior high. And all of a sudden, things are firing, pieces are coming together. Violet, do you have a power adapter for your car?
Yeah.
Like
of course
AC?
I do. Okay. And then they open up a little compartment and there's a bunch of cords coming out.
Yeah.
Massive cords.
And so this is like, you pull out and one of them is basically like a power bank that, you know, plugs into the cigarette lighter thing. And Scratch pulls out this backpack, this now partly broken PC, the plastic broke in the last episode, between the door and between the thugs beating him up. And he plugs in the VGA and attaches this to the back of this computer. Then he takes the power cord for this old computer and he plugs it into your console or whatever.
Yeah, like the cigarette thingy.
And then presses the power button on his computer and pulls down the visor over his eyes.
Boom. Okay.
I cannot believe I'm letting you do this.
Bodhi has a pocket full of, like, random things that he's really sad that Scratch didn't need to ask him if he had some twine, a small abacus, a bunch of rocks, a collection, 5 out of 12 homies from this one set of homies.
Wow. No duplicates?
No duplicates, but only 5 out of 12 of the full set.
Still.
One oversized precious moment angel that... has a real strange face.
Oh, I thought that was your dick.
Oh, it was. Okay. There's a hole in his pocket and his
Jesus.
Penis, which does resemble a precious, oversized, precious moment angel with a strange face.
Oh, it's a strange face, but it actually looks like a pretty normal penis head.
And that's what we call facts.
Canon.
Low-key facts. Boom. Penis head. Back in the shorts. Zoop. But then we're going back to the back of the car.
You hear the fan on this fucking computer chugging. It just does not sound healthy.
Fan on the computer is really humming along. The visor that Scratch now has on his head, you guys in the front are looking back at it. You notice, like, around the halo, like, these sort of very sort of, like, dim lights are sort of popping up around the halo chakra of the head. Scratches you feel inside, it's like very lumpy at the top. It's like very pointed, a little uncomfortable. It's like almost warm. It's you know it couldn't possibly be wet, but it almost feels like it could be wet. It's like almost feels like a mouth sort of like sort of almost like sucking in your head, and it starts to as he's sort of chugging along. You guys from the outside are seeing it sort of like robotically, like suction in, and you're feeling it suction you in, and it's like squeezing down on the bones of your head. Not super comfortable, pretty heavy. And then you see it. It's like, first of all, it's all black, and then you see the same logo as is on the visor, and you guys on the outside notice that the little like dragon symbol on the outside of the visor, the Ouroboros dragon, lights up white. The light shines out, illuminating in the darkness inside of Booger. And you see Scratch inside the visor. You see the dragon.
A pixelated version animated.
Yep. Bites the tail. Spins in a circle. And then the blackness opens up and you're seeing, like, it's not quite 16-bit. It's a little better than 16-bit. But all black and white in your surroundings, and as you look around, it's like the camera almost lags as you keep up. But you can see your surroundings, but in this kind of like 16-bit black and white.
Okay, it looks like we got some pass-through.
What does that mean?
What's a pass-through?
Well, that mean, yeah, say cheese, Aaron, you're on camera. I can see through right now, but it's...
You see me?
What?
How many fingers am I holding up?
Okay, well, between the two of you, each of you are holding middle fingers up. So that's four.
I'm wrong. I'm also holding up my thumbs.
He is holding up his thumbs in a real strong way. And I don't. Your thumbs, Vi. It depends. You could count
that.
Yeah,
one thumb. Check
this out.
Non-thumb.
Check this out, Scratch.
Oh my God, that's a super finger. Is that a super finger?
Yeah, I'm doing the super finger from the Dane Cook bit.
Something tells me Bodhi's got a lot of copies of the Vicious Circle Dane Cook.
Bodhi also knows Dane Cook, but that story that's a story for Patreon
Dream
exclusive episode.
So this thing is like, this helmet is like sort of like heaving and moving on your head, like,
and it's loud too. It's a
yeah. Oh, do we do that again? Oh, I like that.
Like, kind of like when you hear like a shitty robot, you hear the servos inside of it like spinning, and then you hear like little vacuum suction to get things to move. It's like kind of pulsing a little bit. This thing is.
Yeah. I hate to say it. So I'm not
Are
going.
You saying
to.
What I've been thinking for a while? I want to hear it. You're not going to say?
That's what good pussy sounds like.
All right. And just like that, Scratch, you notice the 16-bit, like a white circle is appearing like around your feet. It connects. And then it disappears, and then black again. In the blackness, you start to notice a shape, like a square shape, a rectangular shape, and it's getting closer to you. And it starts to reveal itself. It opens up. It's a little black notebook. And there's some writing on the first couple of pages. It flips through the pages in this 16-bit view, and then it closes, and then it's black and white again. And you're looking at your surroundings in black and white.
Can I ask one question about that notebook? Mm-hmm. Does it look like an animation? Does it look like something that was produced? Or am I like, this for a second looked real?
It looked real. It looked like you were seeing it looked real. It wasn't just like an animation, like the logo. It was not like that at all. So now it's black and white again, and you're seeing a blinking white light. It's not steady. It's going ding, ding, ding.
I turn my head.
And you look, you turn your head towards illumination, and you're looking right now in the direction of... It's not quite a town, because it's just like a few houses here and there. But it's like the general area where there are homes on Shaw Island. And it's the general area that you just came from. It seems to be in the direction of the estate, but you're seeing a very small but very bright blinking white box.
I open the door suddenly. Listen, Scratch won't say it outright, but he's excited.
Yeah.
Okay. He opens the door. I open the door.
Wait, don't
hold
do
on,
that.
Hold on.
Where
and
are you
I,
going?
I'm not. And I climb up kind of onto the roof of the car, not with my feet, but like with my body. And I lift myself up with my arms just to get some extra height. And I can see above the tree line.
Yeah.
In this distant black and white infrared camera view, I can see the actual mansion that we just left. And it seems as though that white dot is like a waypoint blinking within the mansion itself.
I mean, you've played video games. You know that this is a classic. Go here. It's like almost comic.
Okay. Hey, so I think starting to figure some things out. I think this headset has some sort of like AR... GPS functionality. I'm getting like a blinking icon back, brace yourself, back at the mansion that just blew up, as if this is like guiding us somewhere in there. Maybe that's the owner, maybe it's like a server that this is supposed to attach to. But if we are gonna return this thing, you know, I feel like the big blinking white dot kind of, he calms himself down because he's getting really fucking excited.
Violet very sternly looks at Scratch and is like, if you are going to open the car door, you need to look behind first in case somebody is coming. I've had my door taken off. You know how many times? I can't even tell you how many times. So don't just open the car door when you have a thing suctioned onto your head and does a double flick off again to Scratch. Got it?
Bodhi also kind of half-heartedly does the double flick off again just because he's... Vi said that so powerfully.
Yeah, this is a lesson that you gotta learn when you move out to the warp. So Scratch nods and gulps, and he slowly slinks back into the car, closes the door, puts his hands on his lap like a good boy. He was just trying to help, and
Violet
isn't really totally fucking psyched right now.
Okay, and then he's not totally fucking psyched. Yeah, he's hiding it well. Vi looks at him again with more approval. And kind of smirks and is like, you're saying we're going back to the mansion?
I mean, if we want to follow the blinking white dot, we can. We could also go away from the dot, but I mean...
Did I miss something? We're going back to the place that blew up and had a bunch of, like... I mean, we all saw that flying thing. It's Ganon. We saw the people running around. Did we see that, or was that...
Technically, you didn't.
I didn't see that, so let's go back.
Technically, that was the camera pulling out.
Oh. Okay.
Oh. You've heard people howling, so you can basically put that together.
I mean, it sounds like there's people running around, naked, howling like wolves.
Which means the one place we can guarantee they aren't is at the mansion.
Well...
We saw the thing fly away.
Here's the facts. Okay, that thing was fucked up.
It was fucked up.
It was fucked up, and it did fly away. Facts are this. I do need to, presumably, give this thing to the fucking guy.
If he's not dead.
If he's not dead. I need to give it to him. Also, Scratch here, listen, I know I threatened to kill you. I know I scolded you for opening the car drawer, which you should not do before you looking behind.
Yes, absolutely.
Excuse me. Sorry. Continue, Vi.
But the fact that this...
Sorry, I was just trying to get it out real quick while there was a pause.
I'm sorry. I'm laughing now.
I don't mean to.
Can I
open the window, Vi? Would it be okay to...
Open the... Hey, you can open the window.
Can we turn the
open
heat
the window.
Off? Can we officially turn the heat off?
Yeah, why do we have the heat on?
Okay, turn the heat off.
It's hot as hell, and I'm smelling burp and fart.
And I'll be honest, I'm pretty queasy, because this image that I'm getting is like... half a second behind when I turn my head and everything's...
I will drive very calmly so that no accidents happen. No promises, actually, because I love to drive fast. But the other things that I know, Scratch saw this fucking thing in the box and happened to read a prophecy and happened to put the thing on his head and somehow and knew how to turn it on and light it up and is now pointing us in a certain direction. And that all to me just seems a little fucking strange.
Dude, when you say it all like that, it does sound kind of loco.
And we're not talking about the skull in the goddamn box. Look at this thing. This was a Scratch Senior. He was wearing this, going on a little quest, and it's fucking ended up as a skull in a box. So
that's true.
Something to keep
also
in mind.
So
skill issue, honestly. I'm not. It's just fine on me.
It's so far so fine.
It was making all sorts of sucky sucky sounds.
Still is,
buddy. I've never gotten head like this. Let me tell you that.
Oh my god!
Oh, yeah. I go to give you to dap you, but I miss because it's like out of like. Oh wait.
And
sorry,
you accidentally touch the precious moment. You know what I'm saying?
Whoa! Whoa!
That little boy is looking demure.
No, he ain't looking demure. God. He's looking angry. And he's looking like he's finna burst.
Pissed off precious moments.
This moment is imprecious now. It is run of the mill.
Violet.
Working class.
Violet looks at Scratch, who is looking like he's doing his best to keep it together, but she can kind of tell that there's a little bit of excitement on his face, and then looks over at Bodhi and gives Bodhi a knowing, we're doing this type of look.
Yeah, Bodhi's like, that's right, we'll kill him. And that's what he thinks in his head.
And
that's what he thinks in his head.
Which
is
isn't
that,
wrong. That's also a correct
Yeah,
part
if
of
this
the
gets
look
out of hand, we'll kill this guy, hide the body, would not be the first time.
And Scratch gives a face that says, who, me? but you can't tell because he's got the headset on.
That's yeah, right. And so he still just looks a little excited.
Yeah.
Bodhi pulls his handgun out and is just also holding his large
red-handled hand axe.
Red-handled hand axe. I was going to say his Kukra. Kukra?
Bola?
No. I don't know if that was lost to time or
it
not.
It was.
Who knows? Subscribe to the Patreon for more information.
Pulls out a large knife that could be a sword, but it's a knife. In between. Hard to say.
Vroom, vroom. Booger, that green car. That has big wheels, but not too big. That's sort of identifiable, but not too identifiable. Wheels off down the road.
Wow.
Oh.
What the hell?
What an app.
We're here in the interlude. It's not the episode anymore.
Episode 2 interlude has a real nice ring to it to me. I like the sound of that.
And you know what's the coolest thing about episode 2 interlude is that we get to talk about, we finally released episode 1 after so long and working on this show for like literally years. And it's so exciting, you guys.
Oh, dude. I mean, sorry, I feel like Pat Sajak or like someone being like, and can you believe the response we've gotten?
Can you believe it?
It's been nice. It has been nice. I'm here all day. I'm on my phone. I'm going, what are they saying? And it's all nice. And that's not
and
an invitation to start saying bad stuff. Don't even think about it.
Oh, my God.
Do not say bad stuff,
even
please.
As a bit, it will
We're
make
fragile.
Us exhausted. I will say one thing that's nice about having a smaller show is that mostly all of our feedback has been positive.
Mm-hmm.
Even though more listeners will mean that probably someone's not going to like it. As much as I would love to gatekeep our show, please tell people about our show if you're enjoying it, if you think they might like it. Word of mouth is how we freaking pay the bills.
It's everything.
So spread the show and thank you in advance.
Tell your friends and enemies. It will heal the division between you two.
Yes. We're going to save
show.
America. Save the world.
We'll save a marriage. Who knows?
We'll save a marriage.
Rate us 5 stars. And every time you do that, we grow 1 inch taller. And we are very tall now.
Oh, yes.
Actually, we'd like to be a lot taller.
We are 25 inches tall.
25 inches tall. Grow us taller, please. Speaking of paying the bills, support us on Patreon.
Yes.
We have so much extra content on Patreon. We've got some prequel episodes that are just as high quality as the main episodes. And we also have Gutter Talks, which are after show talks. There is one out right now. After you're done with this episode, you can listen to it. It's, we break down the episode and we talk about other crap and stuff like that. And not only that, you help keep the show going. You help us make sure that this thing stays alive and that we can do all the things that we need to do to keep a business running. Okay. We love ya.
We put a lot of time and effort and energy into this, and every bit of support really helps us keep going, guys. So thank you so much for that.
Thank you. Enjoy. Enjoy the content.
Enjoy it. We also want to give a special shout out, Hozak. If you listen to our old show, Neoscum, Hozak, you might know the name because it's a really sick record label doing punk and garage rock experimental stuff. They got it all. It's a really sick label. We feel very lucky to be able to use their music to make our episodes cooler. So just wanted to shout out Hozak. We're still riding hard. Thank you, Hozak. We love you, Hozak.
If I could just say one thing about editing, it's so cool to pull a song that is like 50 years old, that's half a century old, and was recorded like in, you know, a basement or a small studio somewhere. And because Hozak recovered it and released the LP for it half a century later, we get to use it in the show. And I just think it adds this authenticity to the sound that is just so cool. It's unlike anything else. Thank you so much, Hozak.
Thank you, Hozak.
Check them out.
Tons of sick stuff. Check it out. Check out the Limonianas.
Yeah. Have I used them yet? I don't think so.
They're
by
so
this
good.
Point. But inevitably, I will. They're like my favorite. And here's the thing. You can check out Hozak. All of the Hozak songs that were used in this episode in the show notes. You can see all sorts of things in the show notes. So get in the habit of checking those notes for links and plugs to stuff we're doing. Anything we mention or anything we forget to mention will be right there in the show notes.
Can I say one more thing?
Oh, please.
As we were talking about the reaction to this show, I want to give a special shout out to the listeners who have been with us since Neoscum, our previous show, who have followed us for years and contributed so much already, art and, you know, note-taking.
Poems?
And just get poems.
There was a really cool poem.
Yeah,
getting
yeah.
super into the world and, like, so excited to go on this journey with us. We just want you to know that you are part of this show also. You're part of the gutter world and the success, and we're so, so grateful, especially for you, but also for you, new listener. We love you too.
Mm-hmm.
That's it.
I don't know if this was from a listener or what, but there was this like mysterious kind of like crate that came.
Oh, yeah. What is that?
Oh, yeah.
I opened it up, and Casey, can you look inside here and tell me what's in here? I'm just a little scared to look.
Oh, yeah. Sorry. I'm holding the rest of the episode in my hand, but let me just open. Oh, no. I dropped the rest of the episode.
Oh, God.
Oh, no. You dropped the tape of the rest
of the
episode.
The rest of the episode?
Into this crate. Don't tell me that the crate is full of tapes.
No.
Gannon, then I won't tell you, but you're going to want to close your eyes because the crate is full of tapes.
Oh no.
Oh, my God.
All right. Well, I'm going to reach in here. I'm going to try to grab the rest of the episode, but I might grab an ad. I guess we'll find out when we click play.
Sorry.
This episode of Gutter is sponsored by Hero Forge.
Violet, Otter, it's me, Scratch. If you're listening to this tape, then it means my dark prophecy was correct. I got sucked into cyberspace after insulting an Etsy witch on an internet forum. But look, I've been digging through the pages of my archive, and I think I found just the way out. Think about it. The place where you make ideas come to life. Hero Forge. Hero Forge offers fully customized tabletop miniatures with dozens of fantasy species and thousands of parts to choose from, all within your browser. With a variety of materials, including bronze, color standees, and color plastic options, Hero Forge also offers downloadable model files for users to 3D print their unique designs at home. Meaning, you could design me, Scratch Kelly, on HeroForge.com. I could possess the digital model from here in cyberspace, then you could print me into existence itself. In theory. But that's not all. Hero Forge also has custom printed dice where they'll stick your favorite mini, in this case me, floating inside a die. Or you could even put that mini, me, in this case, on a keychain. Hero Forge custom acrylic keychains are printed at the same scale as the rest of Hero Forge minis and arrive already attached to a high-quality zinc alloy lobster clasp, so you can take your favorite character, in this case me, wherever you go. And if you can't quite capture my likeness, it's okay. Hero Forge is constantly expanding its catalog of customization options, adding new parts every week, so check back in and see what you missed. Listen, Violet, Otter, or anyone who finds this tape, visit heroforge.com to start designing your custom miniature and dice today. It may just be the only way to set me free. And if it doesn't, well, at least you got a scratch mini to keep you company.
Hi, I'm Maia, and this is Maia's Game Room, a narrative actual play anthology featuring short-form, story-driven TTRPGs. Each season tells a new story using a different rules-light system brought to life with sound design, editing, and emotional-rich roleplay. So, if you love cinematic storytelling and character-driven drama, come check out Season 1, set in the haunting world of the Electric State RPG. Just search Maia's Game Room wherever you get your podcasts.
Peels off down the road, pine trees above, wind howling hard. It's a hard wind on a cold night. Ocean starting to churn with some intensity beside the vehicle. We're riding down into the village, looking to the left. We're seeing these sort of rustic homes. All the lights are out. No cars on this street. The only sounds, well, there's a lot of sounds in the vehicle. The suctioning, like old fucking Windows. Not Windows fucking 89 is what we're talking about. So fucking old, this fucking Windows. This fucking old app is dapping you up, bitch.
Dude, Windows 69, the way this thing is fucking sucking me.
Sucking on
why, are we, why are we talking about old Windows? Like, old computers used to make suction sounds. Like,
well, it's also going,
buddy, when you use them like I do.
And advance.
Bro, where are you putting that floppy disk?
When I turn my old computer on, it's like... You know?
Truly.
And
yeah.
I love that shit.
All right. So, we're howling off. We're moving towards the town. There's a bunch of rustic houses. Lights off. And in the distance, we hear it. What do you hear when you get closer to the village? Boom. You're getting closer, and you're just like hearing sort of like howls, or the howls of ecstasy, pain, fear. But we're getting closer and closer. And sure enough, Scratch, the closer you get, that blinking light starts to get bigger and bigger and bigger. And sure enough, as we're following this path, you can identify that blinking light is certainly coming from the estate that you just left of Barry Treble, CEO, WCL, West Coast Logistics, Violet's boss. You are coming up now on the turnoff to the very estate, and you can tell it's time to turn left, get on this road. The sounds of distant screams, howling, you can hear it more clearly. The helicopter is gone now. You don't know where the helicopter is. You never even saw it. You don't know what's going on. But those howls, the energy's weird. But you're here at the turnoff. You know that that's the estate.
Okay, folks, I can firmly guarantee now, based on what I'm seeing, that this is definitely coming from within the mansion. And I think as we get closer... Okay, and we're turning now. I'm going to be able to tell exactly what room it's in. I'm hooked into the car, so I won't be able to, like, wear this in. But, like I said, maybe that's the server. Maybe you could leave it there. Maybe that's him. I don't know.
You have a phone?
We have a phone, but there's no fucking... Well, actually, this is society. Maybe there's fucking signal. And I pull out my phone. My phone screen is all sorts of fucked up. It does not read through this pass-through for some reason.
Bodhi pulls out his phone, and it's... actually his precious moment.
Oh,
and he looks at it as he remembers he does not have a phone.
But that's the kind of night it's been. He puts it back.
So if you stay in the car and we go in, well, no, you can't stay in the car.
Can't you
we
just
need
tell
to
tell us the general vicinity?
In.
Let's get close. If we get close enough, I can kind of get a sense visually, and then I can go in with you, and we can probably find our way in.
We have to take this thing off and put it exactly back
we'll
in the box
take
how
it
we
off
found
and
it.
Get exactly.
Even the pink film has to go.
Are we
back
having this
on
conversation
the
while there's people howling around and running around like wild outside?
Yeah, but we're still driving.
You're not seeing anyone running wild, but you're feeling the energy. You're hearing the sounds. They don't seem to. You're now sort of cruising down the street very slowly, but you're not seeing any human life. There is lights. The only lights on the whole street is coming from the estate, pouring through the rounded, all shattered windows. There's just like glass in the street. The lights are shining off of these little crystal pieces of shattered glass. You guys are slowly sort of driving up, parking back in the very spot that you parked in the first place. All the cars that have been parked around there are still there. And actually, this is a really good moment. Scratch, I need you to roll for Mythos. This is Cthulhu Mythos in our show. It's just going to be Mythos. He needs to make a skill check for Mythos. And I think it is time to introduce Casey's fancy special...
Special ring of power.
His ring of power.
Well, we got a couple things going on here. Because, first of all, I do have a ring of power. And oh boy, am I excited to introduce this to the listener. Second, I have zero in Cthulhu Mythos, so I'll still spin for fun.
What about Mythos? What about?
Oh, I'm sorry. You're so right. I have 80 in Mythos. Just kidding. He just said it's the same thing.
How do you gain it?
Actually, that's a great question. Specifically, the way we're playing right now is Delta Green rules, which is a lot like Call of Cthulhu, but if you fail a skill, you can improve it during the level up portion. If you're curious about what specifically is going on in the minutiae of that, just take a look at the show notes. There's going to be, one, a lot of things for you to look at, but two, if you're a rule head, you're really going to like the link to a document sheet of the rules that we are playing with. So that's all I'll say about the rules.
Delta Green also sounds like a synthetic weed that has not been tested by the FDA whatsoever.
Delta Green has like kratom mixed in.
Oh, yeah.
Like,
in 10 years, we're going to find the side effects of Delta Green.
CBG, CBN, CBD, THC, WD-40, and...
BRB, NBD.
TTYL.
LYLAS.
Love you like a sister.
Okay, roll your ring.
Now, the rule heads out there might be wondering about the rules, as Gannon said, but the ring heads out there are wondering what the ring of power is.
Oh, yes.
And that's because in Call of Cthulhu, you need to roll a percentile of 100.
D100, yeah.
A D100.
A percentile.
And now I did buy a D100 ball, which I think maybe this is one of the lost recordings, but I did use that for one recording.
Oh,
and it's
yeah,
comical
we, yeah,
because
we,
it doesn't stop.
Keep, yeah,
this is a
it just
ball.
Rolls
it's
and
too
rolls
spherical.
And rolls.
It is like the angles on it are too subtle for it to like stop on them.
Yeah. And the thing is, how you're supposed to normally do it is roll two D10s. One would count for like the tens and one would count for the ones. I just, for some reason, that really bothers me. I knew right from the beginning that I didn't want to do that. I wanted to roll some other way. I wanted it to be just unique and interesting. And I did a bunch of research and I struggled to figure out something. I wondered if I would have to do some crazy DIY project. Eventually, I stumbled across a D10 ring, which is a ring with a little spinner and it has 10 numbers. And so these are going to be the digits of my rolls. So this is how we're going to do it. I'm going to let the listener listen to this.
And this is for the 10, 20, 30, 40 digit.
Ooh, and buddy, look at that. A 2, so that's a 20.
That's pretty good.
Which is a really good roll.
Honestly, it's
if you don't
really
have
good.
0 in the skill that you're trying to roll. So let's see what my second digit is.
Yeah, who cares?
0. So I got a 20.
Hey, 20
not bad,
really good.
Nat 20.
Still a failure. Gannon, before whatever happens for this failure, can I just say that, okay, I'm really starting to feel it, so I got to get this thing off quick. I start pulling at it, and it's like as I pull, it pulls back against.
Yeah.
I start really struggling with it, and then...
It's almost like it's like trying to take a bite out of you or something.
I start breathing heavier.
And then you feel a strong pain in the back of your head. Like you just got hit by like a pincer or something, just like jammed in the sweet spot where the back of your skull meets your spine, and you take, 3 damage.
I take three solid damage. Oh, Jesus Christ, that. I take three damage, and it's as if like a finger pushed itself into my skull for a second. And right at that moment, I'm already feeling queasy. I'm already starting to hyperventilate. I'm about to blow.
Bodhi is seeing the signs of vomit coming, and he's knowing that Scratch is not doing well.
Yeah, you hear me.
Knowing that vomit cannot get in Booger, or else Violet will be even more on edge than they already are.
It's Booger, not bile.
That's right.
Booger, you not hashtag sneeze. Booger, not bile.
Hashtag Booger, not
sneeze
bile. Hashtag,
as much as you want.
If you are in line, stay in line.
Booger, whatever. I'm going to say Boogermon, go to the polls. Yeah. Let's just continue.
When this comes out, we will already have our whatever number president.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, shit.
Holy shit.
Barack Obama.
That happened for the start of NeoScum, too.
Welcome, President Trump. And take two. Welcome, President Kamala Harris.
Right. Trump will be assassinated before this episode releases. J.D. Vance will be president. This is my parlay.
Okay.
It's an exotic bet. I've gotten really into gambling. Okay.
Boom! Here we are. Scratch is feeling really queasy. He just took a bunch of pain. Maybe there's some stuff dripping down the back of his neck.
Bodhi is going to quickly grab this box to try and catch the vomit in. And with his other hand, he is going to grab a hold of this headset and see if he can't pry this off this guy's head.
All right, just give me a dexterity roll for both.
You want to just spin it on my finger?
No.
Yeah, you want to wear it. Mike's going to wear it.
Mike's got the ring on.
What is that?
Zero.
Oh! No, this is... Zero's fun, right? Because it can either be... Is it...
If I get
it's always good. It's
always
good.
Well, if I get another zero, then that's 100.
No. I'm taking it as 0 to 99, you know?
Okay.
But well, if you want it
what
to
if
be
I
terrible,
get, what if I get? Oh. I think
would we prefer it to be terrible?
I think it should be terrible.
Well, here's why it's fun, because when you get the first zero, it could either be the best thing that's ever happened or the worst thing that's
okay.
ever happened.
It's official.
You don't
zero
know
zero
the
is the worst thing that can possibly happen. So okay. You want zero.
So it's like
zero zero.
Yeah,
the worst.
Yeah. It's exciting because then it's like things could still be bad. Don't get too happy. You didn't get into your first choice college. Okay, 3.
All right, 0-3. That's as clutch as it gets.
For dexterity 2, that is a golden hit.
This is a golden hit. Okay, so the barf is starting to come out of the throat of Scratch.
I have nutted, but the headset is still sucking.
You take the nasty box. The barf is coming out in slow motion. It is landing in the box, and you're moving it. It's almost like a soft serve swirly.
Oh my god!
To keep it from like getting out, and at the same time with your right hand, you are pulling the sucker off of Scratch's head, and it comes off. You got it off, and you close the box.
But right before the box closes, you see that there is a like latte design in the. In the barf, and it's a perfect depiction of Booger, the car. It looks amazing. It's rendered in 4D, basically, but the box closes before you can really confirm. That's what I saw?
And Violet, you're just watching this.
I open the door, but I look back like I was inspired. But I'm like, my face right now, I'm like, and he caught it there, but it was the headset was coming off.
You're
I was
sweaty.
Whipping. I look like that meme of the kitten who's dipped its face in milk. And I look and I kind of just like go out of the car and I'm just on all fours on the ground, kind of like,
Violet, when this is over, we need to get a hot dog.
What happened to putting the thing back in the box exactly how it was?
We could say the vomit was there.
I could just throw the vomit out. Let me open this up real quick.
Oh my god.
He opens it up. Holy shit, that really is an amazing picture of Booger.
Just close it. Just close it.
I wish I was trying to do that.
Just close the box.
I want to see though.
Okay, hold on. Scratch, look at this.
Oh, my God.
Look at Booger and then look at this.
Is that a porcelain? Wait a minute.
No. What the hell? There's a hole in the bottom of the box.
No.
Oh, my.
No.
God damn.
Now it's warm and gooey.
No. That was just one of the homies.
Okay.
Just one of the homies.
Oh, my God. I have a... I need to take my clothes off. And he starts taking his shirt off, but he also starts taking his pants off. And he's just kind of like,
Jesus, oh my Christ. God.
Flopping around the front of this rich guy's house covered in his glass shard covered lawn.
Yeah. Violet steps out of the car and goes to the trunk and opens up a box. And within the box, there are many black shirts.
I thought you were going to say vomit. Thank God.
Yeah, there's lots of vomit that she stores in the vomit box. Lots of black shirts. And she tosses one to Scratch and is like, you need this. Put some clothes on.
And this is like a majorly oversized black shirt. This looks like you got these like wholesale or
yes,
something.
Yeah.
Like, and he puts it on and it's like draped over. He's just in his undies in this like oversized black shirt. He looks like a queasy Tommy Pickles walking with his toes together. I'm okay. I'm okay. I'm good.
Just want to say Tommy Pickles would look so badass in a black oversized black shirt.
They look at Bodhi. Bodhi. You want one of these?
Bodhi looks at the black t-shirt that Violet's holding right now as she wears one, and we got alternate uniform Tommy Pickles over here walking around in one, and he's like a uniform.
Like a uniform?
Yeah, like a team.
Bodhi gets like this distant look in his eye as he remembers what it means to be a part of a team instead of just a lone wolf panther man living on his own. And he says, yeah, we'll take one of those. And he casually rips off his Henley, which reveals, listener, his banging bod.
Rockin' bod.
Rockin'.
This man's body.
I'll put the kids to bed before he describes this body.
Close their ears.
You could take a drumstick, beat each one of his muscles so well defined, and they all make a different, clear, crystal sound.
Ouch. Thank you. That last part hurt.
But Bodhi whips on this shirt, which was oversized on Scratch and a little tight on Bodhi in a way that looks fitted and cool.
Yeah. You're wearing this is your Jack Reacher like look right now, like when he wears his tight t-shirts. Has anybody watched Reacher?
Yeah. I just want to say Bodhi is Jack Reacher is a god in his own right. And I feel like Jack Reacher is a little overclassing Bodhi too. Come on, you gotta respect Jack Reacher.
Nah, dude, you're bigger than Jack.
I said he was 6'2 earlier. I was like, he's so massive. He's 6'2. It's vaguely normal height.
I think
I said 6'2, 6'3.
Yeah, or 6'3. Let's lean on 6'3, and that's barefoot with a slouch that he got from country living.
Bodhi dumps out the vomit real quick and gives it a vigorous shake.
Violet comes over, punts the box with her foot, like kicks it into the forest, and...
And Bodhi runs, and he catches it before it falls, and he spikes it into the ground instinctively, and it breaks.
Instinct. It's like pure cat-like instinct.
And then, also out of the trunk, pulls out a flat, not assembled yet, black cardboard box, of which there is a little storage compartment that has just these, because... You wouldn't even believe how many times somebody has thrown up in a black box that, you know.
Needs to get replaced.
Exactly. So they quickly assemble the box.
Skull, put a visor on it. The night is dark, and everyone's got their black shirts on. The wind is whipping, and there is but one light on this street, and it is shining out from the circular fucking rich guy's house. The busted open windows. And when you look over there, you see that front door that Violet knocked on. Door's hanging open, and a light is coming through it. Scratch, you know, that light that you saw was blinking from inside this building, and you feel pretty confident. Mm-hmm. Kind of get the general gist of how deep inside the building it is.
Yeah.
Dare I say, we got to get in there and get out as quick as possible. Are we on the same page about that?
Yeah, I would like to get the fuck out of here, and I want to hide, but I also have to put this in what's-his-name's hands.
You hear a big scream from the woods, like, that was definitely someone being tortured.
Oh, now, you have been saying a lot of, like, pain or ecstasy. What kind of torture?
That one was bad.
Pain torture.
Okay,
not
let's fucking
torture.
Go.
Okay, let's get inside, and if they have hors d'oeuvres, I could really use something in my stomach right now because I'm empty.
I can't believe you're thinking about eating, although we were talking about hot dogs all day.
Yeah.
Yeah. Maybe okay. If they have a shipping container in there, we can pry it open for supplies.
Violet has carefully reassembled everything back into the box, and they are now holding the box, very clutching it to her chest, like, tight.
Dan and we stride towards this house with a purpose.
All right, so these three guys, wind is just roaring through the pines and the Douglas firs that are all around. Here, there's still sort of distant voices like coming from the forest. And we're walking up, sort of occasionally crunching on glass, stepping up the steps to this door that's emitting this light from the house. These three guys looking in through the door. Still no signs of light. You can see looking into the house. It's a very strange sight. But let me start it off. The first thing you see shocks you, but to preface, this is a house that once had like an overall sort of circular architecture. Like everything was built around a central circular room, right? But that's a little hard to tell right now because what you see is very, very strange. It's like the original intent of the architecture and layout of this place is kind of hard to determine because it looks as though, and prepare you some veil rolls, the home interior has been rent and ravaged beyond comprehension. And not just from like a fucking fragmentation, like just a regular boom explosion. It looks like the claws of hell have rent into the walls and drywall of this house. Like in the very center of this house, this spiraling shape coming from the ground, the very firmament, the very base of this home, this spiraling, scarred, swirling shape is just rent everything. So walking into the house, what you see is just like smashed up drywall, wrecked furniture, and it's like looking at the walls, it's like a swirling energy which began from the center of the house, like dead ahead. Looking dead ahead, you can see blood. Viscera. There were bodies.
Oh, God.
There were bodies for whatever happened, and they've all sort of slid down to the center of this spiraling, like, pit. There's just, like, a spiraling pit in the middle of this house, and there's, like a pool of, I don't know, maybe, like, 10 feet of, like, fluid and carnage. So let me get a veil roll from everyone looking at that.
I no longer want hors d'oeuvres.
Ooh.
Four. No. That was a D20.
Man, this is like D20. This is like that Neo Scum bit all over again.
Yeah, I got a 15. I got a 15.
On a D100?
On a D100. Right. It's an actual D100.
All right.
Bodhi got a 4.
Pass, fail.
Yeah, I got 71, which is 1 point too little, and I could use luck. But let's ride it out. I want to feel the loss of sanity. Because remember, I was feeling excited for a while. I was starting to be like, oh, this is finally, destiny is coming together. And in listeners, you will understand at some point why this is important to me. But for now, all you need to know is that reality, the sick, fucked up reality, has come crashing back in on Scratch. And he rolls a one on the sanity damage.
Only one veil loss. So you have a little sort of like freak out moment looking at the carnage.
If I hadn't just thrown up, I might have thrown up.
You heave a little bit and you're sweating really bad. But looking at that carnage, something actually catches your eye. Floating in the middle of that, the viscera, at the bottom of the spiral, little black book.
Do you guys see that?
That book
right there.
Oh yeah, I'm looking at that. Is that where the white dot was leading?
Is it?
It's about where.
Bodhi creeps down. He's holding his handgun. He looks back at Violet and Scratch, and he's looking at them as he goes to grab this.
You get a nod from Scratch.
You get a shrug from Vi.
And there's no signs of, like, dead people in this environ?
I mean, that's the pool of
a body parts.
Like, you're reaching into some bloody goo.
But it's, like, kind of unidentifiable. It's not like I can see a face of Barry Trimble.
No.
Okay, yeah, Bodhi quickly grabs this black book and then, in a big hulking way, scampers to the rest of the crew.
So, what do you think this was? Like, the living room or the den? little bit of both.
I could see they've done some work.
Bodhi takes a look at the viscera again, where he got this book, and this book covered in viscera.
One side of it is, pretty wet.
Bodhi, while he did not lose any veil earlier because he was stone cold sober with a 4 out of 100, he very kind of logically remembers a barn in the past that was filled with strange blood sculptures. Truly the weirdest thing he's ever seen in his life, and seen on one of the worst days of his life. And he looks at this place and... Did you say what was it?
What room was this?
Yeah, what room was this? Living room or...
I think this might have been the chapel.
Oh, boy.
Oh, I was kind of making a joke, but I think you're right now. This does kind of look like a chapel. Okay, great. So, we will look at the book.
You hear gunshots from outside. You can see directly across from the pit, from the door you walked into, across this pit that's destroyed this whole house. There's another door and it's open. It's looking out into a backyard. You can hear someone going... You can hear more screaming now coming from the front door, from the nearby forest. It's close and it's coming closer.
I think we gotta get the fuck out of here.
Ganon, real quick, are there any other rooms in this?
It's like the whole house has sort of been torn open. It's just like all the doors have been ripped open and everything has been shredded. So no, there's no real other rooms to go into. It's just a mess hollowed out.
Let's get the fuck out of here.
Okay, you guys are running out to the front door. Looking out the front door, you see about a dozen masked partygoers. They're all wandering out of the forest, moving in an extremely disturbing manner. It's like they've all been terribly, terribly wounded. Some are staggering, some are doing a limping run, some are dragging themselves by their hands on their stomach. You can see, facing down these partygoers, standing, unfortunately, right by Booger, two heavily and very bizarrely armored figures. They're holding long, gnarly-looking rifles. They're dressed all in black, geared to the nines, and they're watching these partygoers, limping and drifting closer and closer.
What the fuck?
Blackout!
Back in! I close the doors! I close the doors! We're barricading the house!
We are gonna barricade the house, Ganon.
Hide in a pool of viscera now!
We have initiative. Cover ourselves like a predator. We do like the most insane set of actions that you've ever seen.
I start pooping in my hands and smearing it on my face to scare them.
Pitiless Gaze is the headset?
That's right.
Oh.
That's the name of the headset. But you guys don't know.
Well,
so who knows when that'll come up again?
Never seen that. Never known it.
I didn't read it. I just heard you say that.
So you thought that it was like a gay?
Yeah. Like
Pitiless Gaze? Oh, you're really going to wear that thing?
Pitiless Gaze.
Oh, no pity in that.
Pitiless Gaze on you. Pitiless Gaze have arrived.
The Pitiless Gaze who walk.
They're very cunty.
Gutter.